I'm gonna vote no until we at least get senior housing out. That's just me. Even if it gets amended down, I'm still gonna.
Me too.
Okay, I'm gonna call the Appropriations Committee back to order. And we are now on ONCA 2339, an act to create a budget impoundment process and to establish an alternate effective date. Congressman Potts is the sponsor. And I know he's on there somewhere. Congressman Potts, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I assume we're discussing the Budget Impoundment Act?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Madam Chair. The Budget Impoundment Act is styled after the Impoundment and Control Act of 1974, which states, that Impoundment Act established procedures to prevent the President of the United States and other government officials from unilaterally substituting their own funding decisions for those of Congress. The need for this bill arose after a few instances that we have witnessed of Congress appropriating funds for one purpose and those funds being utilized for another purpose by the executive branch. This is a repeat bill. The first bill was from 2020, 2009. It's, I believe, identical language to what was presented almost 3 years ago. And the need immediately came back up for this. I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, it was from having received what appeared to be an executed contract for the completion or construction of the sports complex there in Pawhuska. So I immediately communicated with some of the members of Congress. I believe we were all on that email where I said, you know, I'll be moving forward with the Budget Impoundment Act again. If anybody would like to work on it with me, I'm more than happy to work. I've not received any feedback from any other members of Congress at this time, but I'm certainly still willing to work on that. But essentially what this bill would do is create a process in law to where if the Congress appropriates money for a specific purpose, of course, it is the executive's job to execute that law for that purpose. But it provides a mechanism if the chief, in our case, decides, no, that's not the best use of those funds, or, you know, we ended up coming in under budget on a project, we'd like to repurpose those funds. It provides a mechanism for the chief to submit a memo to Congress and allows us the authority to rescind budget authority and place that on another project. So that's the basis for a Budget Impoundment Act. Would be happy to see this move today. That's certainly not an expectation. More than willing to answer questions and continue working with other members if they're willing to get this to completion. So with that, I can take any questions and see where we go.
Any questions or comments? Mr. McIntosh?
Thank you, Chair. Congressman Potts, my question would be, does this, I haven't had time because I just saw this legislation this morning to really work through it. How would this be in relation to revolving funds? Revolving funds really don't have budgets. They're set up to where basically that process that you just explained, I think the PIF account, basically the funds are in there for, but that would be the question. How does this pertain to those revolving funds?
Madam Chair.
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Certainly, so this would have no impact on the revolving funds. If an appropriation is made to a revolving fund, the expenditures out of that revolving fund are by law in accordance with the structure of the revolving fund. So if we appropriate money to the higher education fund, there's law that governs how we spend money on education. Certainly, if anyone were to take money appropriated to the revolving fund for the higher education scholarship and spend it on another project, that would not be in accordance with the laws that govern that revolving fund. So this would have no impact on our revolving funds. So this would be for like direct appropriations, similar to what we addressed this morning with, say, the funeral home, the cemetery and senior housing. If those funds were to be utilized for some other purpose, that would be a clear violation that we would need to address. Or if funds were repurposed for another project, that would be something we would need to address. But this law would create a mechanism, which currently doesn't exist, for the chief, yourself, to present a memo to Congress and say, hey, we're under budget. We would like to use these funds that you previously appropriated for the cemetery for this other purpose. So no impact on revolving funds, but it would create a mechanism for other funding sources.
Mr. McIntosh. Since you're the only one here, you can take that microphone to your
desk with me. Okay. Yes, thank you, Chair. In relation to that, currently the model that's trying to be set up in Treasury presently is when these projects are presented, you know, and if we're using tribal dollars, then we're trying to move that into the cap asset fund, which is a revolving fund. And per those parameters in the cap asset fund, it kind of does this already. We have that breakdown showing by project, leftover balances of each project. We cannot reallocate those dollars to any other project in the cap asset fund as of now. We have to come back to Congress to have that excess appropriated to a new project. So I just want to kind of bring that to light also.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Johnson.
Yes, ma'am. I have a question. So I'd like to ask Congressman Potts to kind of explain that again and cite when the executive branch did something with funds that were appropriated for one project and we just willy-nilly took money from that and put on another project. I'll remind the committee that at one point the laws and the rules that covered the capital asset revolving fund had no parameters on it, so that when there was leftover money from Project A and we needed something repaired, as an example, the collapsing walkway over here between IT and the executive building, it was lawful to take any of those leftover cap asset funds and, you know, repair that project. And subsequently, as Mr. Potts or maybe Tyler said, the rules were put back on there, and we are required to send a memo to the Congress to utilize any leftover, for lack of a better term, cap asset funds, which we have no issue. I have no issue with that. That's perfectly fine. You know, not a big deal. So we already do that. I'm just wondering if, you know, there has been a point where, I mean, it sounds like, you know, that there was an accusation that we broke the law somehow. And I'd just like clarification on that.
Madam Chair.
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know that I leveled an accusation of breaking the law, but I can cite two instances. One being the purchase of the Tri-M building, which I believe Congress intentionally carved out of an appropriation bill, yet somehow I believe we've ended up with the property. The second would be what appeared to be a signed contract for the completion of the sports complex there in Pawhuska, despite repeated attempts from Congress to say that's not a project that we would like to move forward with. So those are just two recent examples. There are others. And I'm aware of Mr. Johnson's understanding of the previous laws governing the Capital Asset Fund, of which we did see that occur on multiple occasions, where there weren't laws governing what could come out of the Capital Asset Fund. Residual balances in that were used to purchase other buildings. Congress responded to that by placing restrictions on Capital Asset Fund, which kind of resulted in us moving toward this more single appropriation per project style, I guess you could say, as we do it now. I'm encouraged to hear that we're going back to let's put everything back in the capital asset fund. But I don't know that that's a practice that we're totally apprised of in Congress as we continue to appropriate on a single subject for individual buildings and projects. So encouraged to hear that we'd like for it to go back to capital asset where those protections are in place. But I'm not sure that that's how we're doing it now. But Mr. Johnson, those would be two kind of recent examples. The sports complex with money being spent down there to clear land and other projects. And then the second being the purchase of the Tri-M building.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Johnson.
Yes, ma'am. So the signed contract with the outdoor health complex was done prior to the Congress changing the law from not appropriating federal funds as with the CARES Act money back to then appropriating federal dollars. So that happened prior to the Congress appropriating those funds. And the Tri-M building, and Tyler can correct me if I'm wrong, but in the property purchase fund, it doesn't state that Congress has to approve every piece of property that the executive branch buys, because properties come up for sale. As a matter of fact, I've got an appraiser checking a property in Fairfax today that we got a phone call on yesterday. So they come up for sale constantly like this. And if we have the funds available in that revolving fund, then we are authorized to utilize them to purchase fee property.
Madam Chair.
Congresswoman Lemon and then Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I don't recall off the top of my head, I don't have a photographic memory, but I do recall the conversations about the Tri-M property. And the original ask, Mr. Johnson, do you recall what the original ask was to Congress concerning the Tri-M building? Because I do know that it was purchased for less than what the original ask, correct?
Mr. Johnson, can you respond?
Yes, ma'am. That is the response. Yes, ma'am. That's the answer.
I can't remember the exact ask, but
well, I thought you asked that, you know, we purchased it for less than the ask, and I can state that the reason we asked for an appropriation is because at the time, and again, I don't want to get into the accounting world. That's Tyler's deal. We didn't believe that we had the available funds to purchase that property in the property purchase fund. And so we figured, okay, well, let's ask for an appropriation for Congress so we could purchase it. Tyler comes on board, we look at, start getting balances and everything, and it turns out we do have the funds to purchase that property. So we utilize those funds in accordance with the rules and purchase the property. So it ended up having nothing to do with an appropriation.
Right, so Congress did not, at that time, for the original ask of the Tri-M building, the reason I wanna go through these is because depending on semantics and perspectives on how somebody looks at something, one could say that, I mean, you feel as if you have been accused, or executive have been accused, regardless of what Congressman Potts says, that's how you feel. So I wanted just to walk through these because it's important, I think, for the listening audience to know that there are other avenues that were utilized. But yes, this body did not approve of purchasing the Tri-M building at the time. And Mr. Potts is correct in saying that later on it was purchased. He left out the fact that it was purchased through a different fund and not an appropriation by this body, which I think is extremely important to be 100% transparent in our conversations concerning why we're choosing to do something like the Budget Impoundment Act, which doesn't affect revolving funds, which won't negate the problem that Mr. Potts may see as the purchase of Tri-Am, because that's a revolving fund, correct? I could be wrong.
Yes, ma'am.
Revolving fund. So that example doesn't apply to this particular piece of legislation. And then it's interesting that, Mr. Johnson, that you mentioned about how our legislative process here in changing the way that we appropriate funds from we appropriate every dollar that the nation receives, whether it be federal, whether it be a donation, whether it be and tribal revenue. And by action that we did here with this body and changing how we appropriate our money prior to, we did not appropriate any federal dollars for, was it 2 years?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
And so I appreciate you giving us clarity on that. And so I'm trying to understand if we can have a better example of how this impoundment and control, because that's what we're talking about, and that's a pretty strong word, control. How that applies to the example of the Tri-Am property, and then because that's a revolving fund.
Mr. Potts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm not entirely sure control actually appears in my legislation. I believe it's just called the budget impoundment process. So I can clear that up. Second would be, again, regardless of how people may feel, I have not lobbied any accusation about a violation of law. Fully understand that that was an appropriation to a revolving fund. What that serves is an example, though, because the appropriation to the revolving fund contained, I believe, specific line items on what those funds were to be utilized for. So the instance in this case would be preventative in moving forward with legislation like this, to where the Congress appropriates money to a fund or to a project for a specific purpose. Those funds are to be executed or utilized for that intended purpose. And if they're not, or not going to be, this bill would create a process for those funds to be returned to the Congress instead of sitting in a residual fund to be utilized for another project. When the Congress appropriates money for, you know, X project, I believe the intent should be for X project to be carried out, not Y project and Z project, because we had it where we could use it. So that's the purpose of the legislation, is to be more preventative or proactive instead of reactive, 6 months down the road when we see something may have happened like this again. If we want to go on a more specific example, I don't know why we're stuck on examples on this specific situation, but the other example is specifically the what appears to be a contract for the sports complex, which this Congress has repeatedly said we don't necessarily have the intent to move forward with. I'd be happy to go search for that and provide that to members of Congress, but I know that that was sent out by the clerk of Congress. So we do have access to that.
Madam Chair.
Just a moment, Mr. Johnson. So I need just a little bit of clarification here. When you first started to speak, you mentioned that the revolving funds would not be affected by this bill. And now to me, you're saying the revolving funds are affected by this bill. So can you go through that again? Which way
I is don't it? Don't believe I said that. So the revolving funds
are governed by... Yes, you did at the very first.
I don't
Mr. McIntosh asked if they were affected, and you said they would not be affected.
And I stand by that. I don't believe they would be affected.
But if it goes in the cap asset fund, that's a revolving fund, and you're saying they would be affected. I'm just trying to understand. Mr. McIntosh says he can give an example.
Thank you, Chair. I think a good example would be, say, we're talking about a real property fund, and we know sometimes the property comes up, you know, that comes, but some of those properties, you have to go, they're an auction. And I know a couple of those properties, I believe we did not win the bid. So yes, that money retains in that fund. And that was kind of the question in general. So how does this affect those revolving funds? Because it sounds like this impoundment bill would go into the revolving fund and take that money out. Mm-hmm. And then would that affect the legislation on all the revolving funds? I'm just trying to make sure that I have a clear lane to follow if this does.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
I think Mr. Potts was wanting to say something, and then I'll go to speaker.
I can yield, Madam Chair.
Okay, speaker.
Okay, so in my mind, that if that's a concern, then there could always be an amendment to this bill that says this is not subject to, you know, the revolving funds. That's a fix, right? That's a solution, that this bill does not apply to any money that is put into a revolving fund. Because while I agree, the issue of Tri-Am, when the appropriation came to us, we were asked to provide an opinion, so to speak, of what we thought was a priority. The Tri-Am building was way up there. They ended up having the money in the fund to purchase. So I agree that to me, that is not an issue of where this bill would be an example. I do agree with that. That for me, that's a non-example. I'm not opposed to this. I honestly see this as something. I'm surprised that since 2006 it actually hasn't been introduced, because I do agree that this is a preventative type of legislation. And from 2006 to 2010, the vast majority of our laws were all things that were preventative measures. They weren't things that the executive branch had gone out and done, and so Congress ran over here and said, we've got to fix that. That's just not the case. Most of those laws were things that were done or voted on and passed out as preventative measures. So if there's if the sponsor is willing to amend that in and the committee agrees, I mean, I don't think that it should be, I don't think that the revolving funds should be subject to this law, because if they are, and then Congress is asked to weigh in again on the purchase of property, and we prioritize it, and then you all go outside of that scope, then you would be breaking this law the way it's written. So just those are my thoughts on that for now. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Johnson, and then Mr. McIntosh, and then Mr. Maker.
Yes, ma'am. So, hey, I know we're probably all getting tired of examples here, but here's the best example I can think of. We send a list of properties, restricted and trust properties owned by Osages, to the Congress every fall with an estimate on the cost of, say, maybe our top three priorities for purchase. You know, and it has to follow different guidelines in the law, next to water, adjacent to other Osage Nation property, et cetera, et cetera. And the Congress will appropriate. So say we have we have three properties that are appraised at around $3 million, and the Congress will appropriate the $3 million to purchase those top three properties. Often, very often, we will approach those landowners, and for whatever reason, one way or the other, they will decide not to sell, or family members can't all get on the same page, so they can't sell. So what we do is we move to the number four property or the number five property. We'll go down the list. So, you know, that again, it, by my understanding right now, if I don't purchase those top three priority properties for, through no fault of the nation's own, then that money just sits there. And we don't have the ability to go to that next Osage on the list and say, hey, you know, we'd like to purchase this property. So it takes any kind of initiative away from the realty department to purchase land. And the same can be said for fee property. Again, there are fee properties all over the county that, you know, the nation might be interested in purchasing. It could be just pasture land that's sitting out there adjacent or inside of the ranch or whatever. So it becomes unwieldy and we can't react in a timely manner. Because, I mean, I think all y'all know, land goes quick around here. And if we don't jump on it, somebody else is going to. So, you know, and that's why we need that leeway in there. And again, I'll go back to the contract for the sports complex. Again, it was signed prior to any change in the law that brought federal fund appropriation back to the Congress. Once that was done, then that contract is still signed, but it's just sitting there not doing anything. So, you know, for $17 million, we can still utilize that contract to do the remediation piece with roads money because the contract is good to go. So we're only using roads money to get the dirt and stuff clean. So I don't see either one of those examples as an example of anything except the executive branch working under the rules as they were defined at that time. And I can pretty much say, you know, I was the DO for 8 years. I don't know of any project that the Congress appropriated money for, where monies were used for Exhibit A on Exhibit B. It didn't happen. I'm a soldier. I did that job for 23 years, and rules and regulations, whether I like them or not, are to be followed, and I will follow the law as it is written. I will not deviate. So I have no idea. Now, I will play within those rules, but I will not deviate outside of them. So that's all I wanted to clear up, and it has nothing to do with how I feel. It's what was insinuated, and there you go.
Mr. McIntosh.
Thank you, Chair. To follow up on that, yes, in providing the revolving fund report, there is an attachment that shows all land acquisitions that have been made out of the real property revolving fund by fiscal year. So it lists all properties, shows which years they were purchased in, and shows the remaining balance in that fund. So those are reported and will be reported moving forward in accordance. Also, in relation to that, if this bill does not affect revolving funds, is the proposed amendment. I may steal your thunder, but close. That if it's not with the revolving funds, then typically that leaves it to the operations budgets. And at the end of the year, those sunset, just as what we earlier stated, those will sunset and go to retained revenue. So it almost happens at 9:30 in a sense. It impounds the budget at 9:30, puts it into retained revenue, whatever didn't get spent. I just wanted to make that statement.
Okay. Congressman Baker.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, that pretty much was my question, Mr. McIntosh. But I don't see where it says where these funds go indefinitely to this impoundment process. Where does these dollars go if they're to be protected? Or is this creating like another retained revenue type fund, or where does this money go?
Congressman Potts, do you want to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Congressman Maker, there's not a fund that would be created, and what this would do is create a process for the chief or the chief's team, treasurer, to identify what funds would not be utilized for a specific purpose. They would communicate that to Congress. Congress then follows up with legislation to withdraw budget authority and assumes responsibility or availability to reappropriate those funds somewhere else. So it doesn't create a new fund, a new revolving fund. It doesn't create a new retained revenue fund. It just creates a process before 9:30 for those funds to be utilized for another purpose throughout the fiscal year. And then just to speak to something else prior, and I hate that we're getting sidetracked on this, but it does look like one of the laws that we passed was as of May 27th, 2021, explaining that no tribal funds, non-tribal funds shall not be drawn from the treasury of the Osage Nation except by appropriation. But it does look like some of the signatures on the contract for the $17 million sports complex did occur after that, as of 9/23/21 and 3/30/22. So not trying to go down that road. I'm just trying to state the facts as we see them on contracts that have been presented to Congress and match that up with legislation that this body has passed.
Mr. McIntosh?
But,
Congressman, go ahead.
Sorry, Madam Chair. So to speak to the previous request for an amendment, I would absolutely be open to that amendment and more than willing to work on that.
Okay. Mr. McIntosh and then Speaker.
My understanding related to the contract has been talked about here during this time is that within that contract, it states that that contract is only valid if funding is available. And that's why no activity has really occurred in relations to that contract. Mr. Johnson, correct me, but that is essentially was part of the review in relation to that was that if funds were available and currently that no funds have been appropriated to that project. So that is Mr. Johnson, I think, stated earlier, that's why that contract's in place, but it's idle. And, but yeah.
Okay.
There is that term in there.
Speaker.
Of an amendment, page 1, line 40, section 1, under disclaimer, under A, insert 5, number 5, this act shall not apply to revolving fund appropriations.
Second.
We have an amendment, a motion for an amendment with a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Any opposed, say no. Motion passes. So I hate to bring up another point, but it just occurred to me that one of the things that we saw, I think, in the fall session was we asked to review a contract, which we did receive the contract. And as I went through it, I found another project, another unfunded project within that contract. Would this law prohibit that from happening, or would it not be able to touch that since that was a contract?
Madam Chair, is that a question?
I guess it's a question, yes.
I mean, to me.
Yes.
Okay, to be honest, Madam Chair, I would need to review the specifics on what you're talking about, because I don't know the circumstances of how money was appropriated and where that went. So I would be happy to visit with you on that and see. But without more specifics, I'm not sure.
I can't recall which contract, and I can't recall which project. Well, I remember the project. I think the project that I saw inserted was the shooting range. So, okay. Well, anyway, that can be for another discussion. Any other?
Madam Chair, I'm...
Congressman Potts.
I'm happy to follow up with any documents we've received regarding the shooting range, and can get with the budget analyst to try to have that conversation.
Okay. Are there any other comments or questions on this bill? Speaker.
I don't have any comments or questions right now, but I do, I am undecided on my vote. I do not know when you have another appropriations meeting coming up, but I also want to be fair in that I do want to be respectful of all my colleagues in the area of, we know when we have to have this out, reported, mm-hmm. into a final vote. And while I may be a no vote on it, if it passes and it receives a veto, I want to be fair and respectful to all of my colleagues to get it out of committee, so that process can play out. I'm not a solid yes, but I'm not a solid no either.
I'm following along those same lines. Yeah. And my plan right now, just to let the committee know, as I mentioned before, I do plan on doing something probably Wednesday next week. I need to look at the calendar and see what we've got going on that day. So I'm waiting till after Tuesday when we get the analysis from the treasurer, and then we'll bring in the last couple of bills that we have, so we can put this back on the agenda for then.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. McIntosh.
Thank you, Chair. So I guess in making sure that I understand what the, if I understand this correctly, it would say that throughout the course of a year, we'd have to identify if what was appropriated was potentially being spent. If I get to the end of a fiscal year and I have budgets with leftover balances that didn't get spent, have I violated that law?
Good question.
Madam Chair.
Congresswoman Lemon and then Congressman Potts.
So that is something that whenever you do some research about impoundment acts of Congress, and of course Mr. Potts has a response to Mr. McIntosh, but like, that's a fair question, in the sense that we have that issue sometimes with our U.S. Congress and the situations that when you look at them in the historically. So, but I think that's a valid question, and I'm interested to hear what Mr. Potts has to say.
Congressman Madam Potts. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, that would not be a violation of the law, because you're not taking those funds and spending them on something else. So as long as the shortfall is there but still available for the intended use as the Congress appropriated, there would be no violation of law.
Congresswoman Lemon.
So Congressman Potts, I'm going to go back to a statement that Treasurer McIntosh made earlier about the sunsetting or their fiscal year end. Because the examples we've gone through haven't helped me in my decision. So I'm ambivalent at this point concerning, where I'm at. And I'm glad this is going to come up on another committee, but this is going to give a little bit of food for thought in the sense of help explain, I guess, give an explanation on, at the end of the fiscal year, whatever was budgeted is going to go to retained revenue based on how we are set up now. So can you help me understand how this helps? Because we are already in a process where these unless you have, unless it's a certain line item that, and the shifting or whatever, because I know that that's a big thing for you.
Madam Chair.
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the line item shifting would still be governed by the Budget Process Act. This would be specific for if the Congress appropriates funds for one purpose. Let's say elder nutrition. This is a hypothetical. It has not happened. No accusations. Just saying this as an example. If the Congress appropriates money for elder nutrition, if during the course of the fiscal year, the chief decides, I'm not going to utilize those funds for elder nutrition. Instead, I'm going to use it for a new park. That can't be done, or I don't believe that should be done. So what this bill would do is create a process for the chief to send a memo to the Congress and say, I would like to take these funds that are for elder nutrition and utilize it for this park. This bill would create a process for that to be allowed, or for the budget authority to be removed from being expended on elder nutrition and applied to the construction of the park. Now, the other option is the chief lets it go to the end of the fiscal year without expending the funds from what we appropriated for elder nutrition. Those funds at 9:30 would revert to the retained revenue fund, and then we could request an appropriation from the retained revenue fund for the construction of the park. That is the other option. But if we wanted to start construction on the park halfway through the year, the chief can say, hey, I'm not going to use these funds for elder nutrition. Congress, will you work with me? Can we go build a park? If Congress agrees, those funds can be moved during the middle of the year. This bill would create that process.
Congresswoman Lemon.
So I appreciate the hypothetical, Mr. Potts, but that's what executive does at this point. Example that I can give is that the senior, the assisted living facilities that we appropriated out of the ARPA dollars, and they came back to this body and said, the executive came back to this body in the health and said that that's, that we want to work together, but this is what we can do and how we want to change that particular legislation. Granted, it's still going to assisted living, but they did come back and say that this, your intent was this. We don't feel that we can meet that intent, but we can, with this solution over here, give give us an assisted living, but not three assisted livings. I mean, the process of receiving a letter is what we're debating pretty much here, in my opinion. I'm sure that you may have a stronger opinion. It's just, they do this, and these are processes that we have in place. You're just trying to put it in law. Is that, Mr. McIntosh, can you comment?
Thank you. Yes, I believe that you'll see that, as we've been discussing in a lot of appropriations meetings, that we're putting in those processes and all processes to that level to say we're going to fund a whole brand new project. That does not occur. We, as you'll see in the budget modifications we're bringing down in this session, to say, here's how the budget originally went through. This is where the needs are currently, and this is where we want to modify the money to. We would do that same process if we're going to move it from one, say, department to another department. I feel like the code kind of states all that that's how it's supposed to work, and that's the why we're implementing and following the current code.
Anyone else? What would y'all like to do with this bill?
Postpone it.
Okay, could I get a motion?
Yes, you can. I just don't know the number in front of me. Motion to postpone ONCA 2339 to the call of the chair.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Any opposed, say no. Okay, motion passes and it will be postponed. Next on the agenda is the last bill for discussion, and it's ONCA 2343, an act to amend the Osage Nation Health Benefit Act at 16 ONC 3106 to increase the benefits to members under 65 up to $1,000 and to establish an alternate effective date. Congressman Potts is the sponsor. Congressman Potts, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will do my best to be brief and let everyone get out for lunch. This bill is presented. It's similar to bills that have been presented in the past. However, this bill doesn't seek to remove the deadline. It doesn't seek to bring back the rollover. All this bill does is seek to allow for an up to benefit amount for the health benefit for those members under the age of 65. So consistent with the up to language, this would still be up to the chief or the treasurer, I believe, is who's actually charged with that task. The treasurer to be able to set the benefit amount for the next fiscal year. I think that's pursuant to 16 ONC 3104C from my notes. And it looks like the last time we received one of those memos was 9/16 of 2019. By law, that is supposed to be done on an annual basis. We've not received that since 2019, but that is the law that allows for the executive branch to set the benefit amount of up to $500 currently. So what this bill would be doing would be increasing for those under the age of 65 up to $1,000. And again, I believe this was included in a previous piece of legislation that I presented. The justification for it at that time was email communications to constituents in Texas that stated that this was a priority of our current chief to increase to $1,000. What's changed since then is a repeated statement at the Southern California event last fall after the previous piece of legislation failed, that again, it was stated that this would be a priority and increasing up to $1,000. So moving forward with legislation to accomplish just that task, hope that we can get behind this bill. Again, it's not saying that the benefit will go to $1,000. It's saying that the executive has the ability to set up to $1,000 for those under 65. So this will be no additional cost at this time. It could be no additional cost in the future, but it's definitely something that I want the executive branch to have the ability to offer, especially if we're going around saying that it's priority. So with that, I yield and happy to take any questions.
Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you. So the current legislation says up to 500. And that has always been, you know, at executives in their ball court. The court's been, the ball's been in their court as far as how much they're going to allow when they come down for the appropriation for the health benefit fund. That language is in there, and Mr. Potts is just adding, just increasing the amount that the executive can request from this body for an appropriation. Instead of saying that it must be 1,000, it's up to 1,000, which it already is there as up to 500. And while I agree that it would be up to executive to make that decision, this has always been a hot topic. If it's not the rollover, then it's the benefit amount. And we do have a fiscal analysis in the event that the this piece of legislation were to pass. And I would like to see if Mr. Frazier would be willing to walk through it, or Mr. Potts on the fiscal analysis, because we're talking about dollars and cents here, and it's not just a few. And while I realize that the fiscal analysis is based on the max amount that can be utilized, this becomes a political struggle between Congress and executive. And I can see where whoever's sitting on the Hill would be faced with constituents such as the ones in Texas and California that say that they need this benefit. You know, I can hear the sayings of, well, executive has the ability to do that. They just won't. The language says up to. And that's where we get caught up a lot on, well, we're going to blame this branch or blame that branch. And while I'm not against the language to up to, this is has been a political topic for quite some time. And it's probably going to continue to be one. But the fiscal analysis on the max amount that we would be looking at is significant. And we're talking about funding other issues, which this has been in place for quite some time now. And we're looking at prioritizing other issues in the sense of putting and funneling funds into a funeral home, possibly, that might need more funding at some point in time, a cemetery, hopefully that they're both built at a scalable level, and, you know, our elder care. It sounds like this particular body and a lot of our data that we receive from our constituents in strategic planning and some of our health surveys talk about elder care. And I just wanted to mention the fact that this is a benefit that we already have. It's been in place for some time. And I support this benefit that we have for our people. So in looking at the bigger picture, you know, we're talking millions of dollars toward this benefit that we've had for a while, and we're lacking in some other areas of the nation on services that we could provide, such as to elders. And so it gives me pause when I'm looking at increasing this amount, and I'm not saying that our people aren't deserving, and I'm not saying that at all, but we have other populations, specific populations that need our care also. And I do know, Mr. Potts, this helps out our elders. It helps out every Osage member. So I'm not supporting this at this point in time due to the fact that that I would really like to see the monies that would possibly go to this particular appropriation, this particular amendment to the bill, would take money away from other projects that are on the horizon for us, on top of the fact that all of the operating costs that we have not set down and come together to talk about what we're looking at with all these projects that we are building and all these services that we are going to offer, and what dollar amount is that looking like and forecasting. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Congresswoman Shaw.
Thank you, Chair. And I understand the up to, but it's safe to assume that if we were to pass this piece of legislation, then we would, in fact, incur the estimated additional cost from $5 to $7 million per year. I feel exactly the same as Congresswoman Lemon does regarding the projects that we have coming up, how we're going to fund the not only the construction and complete the projects, but also how we're going to afford to take care of them. Now, having said that, there isn't a person here that wouldn't love to be able to do this for our members. I mean, who wouldn't, as a congressperson sitting in the seat, like to be able to say, you know what, we are in such a great financial position that we're going to increase that benefit for everyone under the age of 65. So while I support that, I don't support the fact that we have so many unknowns at this time regarding some of the upcoming projects that are pending and what the cost will be to run them. So I do not support this based on that. I understand that, you know, that there is a need. But, you know, the other thing is to consider the fact that we are also waiting for a census. to go to our people so we can really see if there is a need for this increase. Thank you.
Anyone else? Anyone else?
Madam Chair.
Congressman Bighorse.
Well, I can't say it any more elegant than what Congresswoman Shaw stated, but I too am getting to the point to where we're getting towards the end of these ARPA and CARE dollars, and I am kind of nervous about where this is all going to shake out on our distribution coming from the casinos and our ability to pay for all of the projects that are being created.
Anyone else? Speaker.
Well, I think that Congresswoman Shaw, really said it best when you look at the actual wording up to. It doesn't require. It doesn't say that executive is required. It says up to. And I'm looking at this at from a few different angles. In the event that we ever have someone sitting in that seat, that healthcare is their absolute top priority, and he or she would prefer to spend the majority of our revenue on that, it would allow for whoever's sitting there to make that decision, right? We could up to a lot of things. We could up to burial assistance, we can up to scholarship, we can up to the health benefit, because there's a lot of things that we can up to. And I do realize that this wording places it over in the other side, but it places it over on the other side to make a decision, but we have to work together. We have to hear what executive needs are, but we have a say in that too. We help determine what the priorities are. And I said this the other day, that for the priorities for Congress during those ARPA spending dollars were PRT, senior housing, and the funeral home. And yes, direct assistance and some other areas. But that's where we prioritize. So I feel like if we change this up to now, it creates something that I truly believe that we need to leave it where it's at for now. And this can be something that maybe we're able to do after projects are complete. And so I'm a no for this. I don't know how the committee feels about where they want to see this. If they want to see this go to the floor with no recommendation or do not pass, I don't know. But I'm of the opinion that we need to leave it the way it reads now, that says up to 500.
Mr. McIntosh.
Thank you, Chair. I just did a quick kind of analysis. Based on our current enrollment that was reported there, I think this past Monday, at 13,374. Now, it also showed, I think, in page 4 of that report, the potential highest enrollment we've had under 65 is at 14,070. So kind of using those two numbers, but utilizing the 13,374 participant number, I'm showing at each $50 increment increase, that's about a $668,700 increase for each $50 increment. So going from 500 to 550, that would, you know, increase the liability by $668,000. So I show at a $100 increase, that would increase the liability of around $1.3 million. So just, that would be the analysis that would have to be done prior to obligating or setting, you know, an up to amount. You'd have to make sure someone does this analysis, looks at the reserve in the current revolving fund and takes all that into consideration. But that's a little bit of the numbers that, I guess, in saying what those potential increases would be based on those participant numbers, that's the estimate.
Anything else? Any motion or movement?
Madam Chair.
Congressman Big Horse.
I don't want to see it die, so I'll make a motion that we postpone ONCA 2343 to the call of the chair.
Have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second for discussion.
Second for discussion.
May I?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So just kind of taking into account everything that the committee spoke about, all the members spoke that are, you know, on this committee, except for, of course, Congresswoman Revard's not here, but the Committee of Jurisdiction, it sounds as if that there's not support for this particular piece of legislation. So, Congressman Big Horse, I think that we could consider possibly amending the motion if you would be comfortable with that, unless you were wanting more analysis to be done in the way that Treasurer McIntosh was looking at it. Because if that's how you feel, then I want to support you in that, sir. But if not, I would be okay with it leaving committee today with a do not pass or no recommendation. But that's just me. That's why I seconded for discussion.
Okay.
I just want to hear what others might have to say.
Anyone else? We have a motion and a second. Oh, Congresswoman Shaw.
Thank you. I would agree. Actually, that let's get it to the floor and allow Congress to vote on it. I mean, it's been, you know, brought up before, and it will likely come back again. I don't know if leaving it on the tracker until the committee chair decides to bring it back is the best option for me, but that's my personal opinion. So I would prefer getting it to the floor for a vote.
Madam Chair.
Congressman Big Horse.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Motion has been withdrawn. Anyone else?
I'll make a motion to report bill number ONCA 2343 to Congress with no recommendation.
Second.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion here? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying yes.
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 Any opposed, say no. Motion passes with a do not pass. No, it was a no. It was a
no recommendation.
No recommendation. Thanks. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Motion. Do we have a second? Motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
And we are adjourned. Thank you all.